the hard thing to stomach, regardless of whatever industry you're in, is that if a client feels you're like you're a commodity, then there's not going to be a whole lot you can do to change it. If he thinks you're a commodity, you're a commodity. Now, we agree, I believe holistically, completely, with every fiber of my being, in the value that staffing firms bring and the value that opportunity, creation opportunity, providing people a way to make a livelihood, that is sacrosanct. That's a sacred role. I have a deep passion for it. But if the enterprise doesn't feel that the value you bring is truly a strategic one and more of a point solution or a transactional solution, well, that's that you need to take a good hard look in the mirror and make a decision. Mm-hmm. Is this a client you want to work with? Mm-hmm. Is this an industry we want to be in? Is this the vertical we want to be in? Mm-hmm. Or what can we do to really meet the value expectations of my clients?
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Okay, everyone. Today I have Brian Pena on the show. We are so excited to have you today, Brian. I have been a fan for some time of you and your prevalence in the staffing industry. Go ahead and give us a brief introduction on yourself.
Thank you, Angela, and thank you for having me today. My name is Brian Pena. I am the principal for my own private consulting firm called Defiant Solutions LLC. Prior to forming Defiant Solutions, I was the Chief of Market Strategy for MBO Partners, and then prior to that, I was the Senior Vice President of Continued Workforce Strategies for Staffing Industry Analysts.
Awesome, awesome. So, Brian, like I said, I've been super excited to interview you today. You were one of the first people I reached out to as I announced podcast host for the Ivy Podcast, mm-hmm. and I've created this kind of trend with each podcast episode. It's called the Fire and Ice Questions. It's okay. A ring of fire to kind of put you under the pressure, but the ice part is to break the ice and get to know you a little bit better after all.
Okay.
So tell us, okay, are you an early bird or a night owl?
Yes. I actually don't get a whole lot of sleep. I usually sleep maybe 4 or 5 hours a night. So yeah. I go to bed relatively late and I wake up relatively early. So I'm one of those awesome freaks, I guess.
Yeah.
I drink a lot of coffee.
N.A. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly. None of the above.
All right. So most interesting fact that people probably wouldn't associate with Brian Pena.
I'm trying to think of something I haven't talked about before. I think something that people might not know is that one of my favorite things to do is stand-up comedy. So last year I did my first set at the Improv in Hollywood. Did a stand-up comedy set there. So a lot of people might not be aware of that, but that's one of my first loves is comedy.
Wow, totally would never have guessed that. So definitely surprised by that. Okay, what do you live by to stay organized besides coffee?
Well, I think the app that I could not live without is Calendly, the calendaring app. I think that putting the Calendly link into my email and just kind of directing people to set time that way is 100% a time saver, no question. It saves a ton of time. I highly, highly recommend it. I don't get any kickbacks for it, but I do highly recommend the application. It certainly is a lifesaver.
Yeah, you tell your personal calendar, this work calendar, the other mm-hmm. work calendar. It's,
absolutely.
It does save your life.
Totally.
Yeah. In fact, that's how we scheduled this today. So
it is how we did this. That's right.
Check in the box. Okay. So if you weren't the thought leader that you are in the staffing industry, what do you think your career would have led you to? Would you be in the showbiz industry doing comedy or probably something else?
You know, I don't know if I would want to be pursue a career in entertainment by any measure. I think I'd probably go to school and want to teach.
You know, I'd
probably
get
like a degree in like philosophy or something like that. Like if I had total freedom to do whatever, I think I would probably do something like that. Pursue a career in academia and just explore new ideas. I love new ideas and thoughts, and I like to share those and get people excited about them. So mm-hmm. That's one of the things I probably would want to do is go back to school and get a PhD.
Well, you know, that's what I automatically correlate you to, because when I got, like I told you before the recording, when I first recognized you from teaching me the CCWP certification with SIA. So
yeah,
we'll get into that a little bit later. But all right, so now we can get into the good stuff, the real questions that we wanted to ask you today. And what I was hoping the premise to be behind this is to make, you know, contingent work, flexible work, a notion that's more understandable to the masses out there. Yeah. So how would you define the flexible staffing and external workforce to somebody that doesn't necessarily know about contingent workforce in general?
Well, you know, gosh, Angela, that's such a huge question. I think that really contingent work in all of its forms is simply a mechanism by way enterprises, organizations can leverage people, human capital, in non-traditional ways. So if we think about it in the broadest possible terms, contingent work, extended work is really anybody who is providing services to your organization who is not a W-2 employee of the organization. Now, it can get more squishy when you think about seasonal employment and stuff like that. But for the most part, extended work and contingent work is a mechanism by way organizations can engage people in a multitude of different ways, right? Wow.
Awesome.
That's basically
awesome.
It's
indirect.
We can go down the rabbit hole on that one.
Yeah, we can. What kind of worker is it? How many layers are there?
Exactly. Is it an independent contractor versus somebody, you know, an outsourced call center in Bangladesh? All those sorts of things are just simply ways that people can exchange a skill or a competency for some form of compensation, as opposed to establishing a full-time employment relationship.
Untraditional indirect form of finding workers.
Okay. I like that. That's a good articulate way to say it.
There you go. All right. So like I mentioned earlier, you were pretty instrumental in the formalization of the CCWP program with staffing industry analysts.
Yes.
And I'd love to pick your brain on what that experience was like, especially in this rapidly evolving area of contingent work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the CCWP program is something I was incredibly proud of for my time at SIA. And it really started as an idea and a PowerPoint of mine, I almost want to say almost 11 years ago, unbelievably. Mm-hmm. I saw the need for professionalization of managing the extended workforce. I also realized that there was a very strong need for industry standardization. I mean, way back when, there wasn't even a consistent definition of what a reasonable time to fill calculation would be, or what is the definition of a good program versus a bad one. At the same time, providers were struggling with a lot of buyers who are not necessarily educated on the nuances of engaging contingent workers as a strategic resource. So the CCWP was something that was born out of that need to fill that hole of understanding and developing a standard language, as well as a minimum level of competency for someone to be what is called a competent player in the ecosystem. So we had, at the time, we engaged CSRS council members, large MSPs, staffing firms, VMS, and then we created a list of core ideas, thoughts, concepts, and bits of knowledge that we felt were necessary for someone to succeed in this emerging kind of domain of expertise. And out of that came the CCWP. Kudos to Barry Asen and the leadership team, along with myself, in putting forward the necessary resources. And now it's really something I'm incredibly proud of. You've taken the class, and it's taught on multiple continents, and you know, several thousand people, and it's
the gold standard
never
for contingent. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I never cease to be excited and surprised by how people have leveraged it, how it's changed their careers. You know, I have little searches on Google search. So every time somebody puts up, hey, I got my certification, I get a notice and I do my best to congratulate them. But it's been a source of tremendous pride to see people such as yourself take the class.
Yeah, as well it should be, because it, like I said, it's become a standardized form of recognition within the contingent workforce industry. So kudos to you on that. All right, so we got to talk about the elephant in the room. It's the pandemic.
Yes.
And what your thoughts is on the pandemic and what COVID has done or what it's going to do to influence the contingent workforce? What do you think is going to happen from that?
Well, I think obviously, you know, contingent work has always been the canary in the coal mine for economic activity, right? So whenever there's a downturn, it's usually the first place you see that sort of thing. Ironically, at the same time, on the other side of that coin is as things start to recover, you see that that inverse is one of the first things to also recover in terms of full-time hiring. So that natural cycle is definitely occurring. It is certainly affecting some industries more than others. For example, the service industry is absolutely decimated, but you know, healthcare, for example, is going through the roof. They're just simply constrained by supply. So I think the pandemic is going to do a couple of different things. It's going to force enterprises and organizations to really reassess how they leverage people. I think that individuals specifically are going to recognize and really kind of reevaluate their priorities. I mean, we've all been subject to this existential crisis of COVID and reassessing our career goals. And we might realize that we might want to work more flexibly. Maybe that's working remotely. Maybe that's deciding to become a digital nomad and working independently. And I think we're going to see a lot more people choosing to kind of go it their own way. One of the interesting statistics that I found really fascinating in the pandemic is the rise of people choosing to become solo entrepreneurs. In Q3 of 2019 to Q3 of 2020, there was an 80% increase in individuals applying for employment identification numbers. That means that there's millions of people are deciding that they're going to go ahead and try and go it their own. And that's just the people who got EINs, not to mention the thousands and thousands and millions of other people who are choosing to create their own solo practitioner business on the back of many, the hundreds and hundreds of different platforms in which they can make a living. So I think that we're going to see a almost like a renaissance in kind of new work forms, new forms of working, because every organization is really reassessing the way that they leverage people and trying to identify ways that they can meet people where they are. Also, and kind of influencing all of that is I think people are going to pursue more meaning in the work that they do. They're going to pursue, they want jobs that don't just pay the bills, that they can feel passionate about and have a mission to do, because crises tend to do that to people, is that they have to take stock of their lives and reassess what's important.
So I love what you're saying about this, because I think oftentimes we see about, you know, we see and read so much about how contingent work can increase just due to businesses' agility and the agility that they may need to scale up or down in times of economic uncertainty or just general uncertainty like the pandemic has caused. But your response was totally geared towards how that's going to affect the worker. I mean, more so, you know, obviously there's favorability behind businesses doing it, but there's a lot that's happening in the mindset of the worker and the shift that we see in entrepreneurs and how that can play a part in, you know, the work and the fulfillment that they find through what has been a very crisis-oriented last couple of years.
Well, the real challenge, I think, for organizations moving forward is going to be less about sourcing people, sourcing talent, and more about handling talent. That's a great line.
We got a couple of them zingers coming happening in this podcast.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like my good friend Neil Bryson, he had that line I was talking to just today, and I thought it was just absolutely the best way to say it, is that organizations are really not going to have a problem with finding people, because they're going to be awash in resumes and applicants and all these other sorts of things. The real magic is going to be in how they're going to handle them, how they're going to handle these people. Because the consequences for a negative employment experience or a negative experience overall, it can be quite catastrophic for a brand. I've often argued that paying attention to the experience of your extended workforce is even more important than even focusing on your full-time hiring, because the velocity of those individuals through your business is that much greater. And if they have a negative experience, if you don't respond in a timely manner, if their resumes go into a black hole or whatever, you're creating a service terrorist. And that person is going to tell 10 people what a terrible experience they had. Don't bother applying. And that's going to poison the well. So, you know, and it's going to be easy for those things to occur if you just have a million people in your ATS. And so the successful strategies moving forward are really going to focus on really creating an excellent experience for everyone who your brand comes in contact with, not just your full-time hires,
just really focusing on company branding that
absolutely
are referencing. And you see a lot about it and you hear a lot about it. So, and the perfect segue to my next question. So what are some of the biggest changes that you foresee employers or larger enterprise organizations having to do from a technology standpoint to be able to fulfill or oversee a contingent workforce more successfully?
I think that organizations are going to take a harder look at the way they're implementing their VMS technologies, their vendor management software, their services, right? I think they're going to take a hard look at how those are implemented, looking at these adoption paths and understanding, really taking a candid analysis of how effectively these are being deployed. Mm-hmm. I think a vast number of programs tend to just kind of atrophy over time because they're just good enough and they're not really pursuing strategic initiatives. I think that sort of atrophy and focusing on simple process efficiencies and cost savings are going to have a negative consequence in the future. So you're going to need to explore more more non-traditional elements of sourcing. That includes integrating things like online staffing applications like Upwork or Fiverr or whatever. They're going to include looking at your direct sourcing strategies without a question. Successful organizations are going to be implementing a direct sourcing technology, right? Mm-hmm. I think that is 100% the next big trend we're going to see, just like we talked about before, is leveraging those direct sourcing methodologies and really taking a good hard look at how you leverage statement of work and consulting and kind of reassessing the total talent management narrative. Now, I'm not a huge fan of total talent management necessarily because I think it's a buzzword and in many situations it might be a solution in search of a problem. But I really do think there's something to it in that you look at your whole sort of workforce holistically as opposed to in the uniform kind of utopian vision that people often express. I believe that it's super, super important from a technological standpoint to recognize that the sourcing channels can be multifaceted as mm-hmm. long as it's coming through a uniform like application like a VMS.
So it's really just responding to this digital platform technology that we see happening with companies like Fiverr or, you know, online staffing, you see that trend going upward. So it's capitalizing on inputting or sourcing talent from those models. And also you mentioned direct sourcing. Mm-hmm. So what's your easiest way to define direct sourcing to the audience listeners out there? And why do you see the uptick happening?
Well, I think direct sourcing in its simplest terms is a way for organizations to monetize their employment brand to source the extended workforce. There's many ways you can do that. There's talent pools and all these other sorts of things. But at the end of the day, it is simply allowing an enterprise to be able to use their employment brand to source their extended workforce. And there's dozens of ways that organizations can do that. They can leverage an outsourced recruitment partner. They can leverage their own ATS and an internal recruiting team. Dozens and dozens of ways. Mm-hmm. I forgot the second part of the question on that one.
Why do you see the uptick happening?
I think the uptick is going to happen because one, I think there's a professionalization of individuals who are managing the industry, such as yourself. Yeah. You have the CCBP, people who are making it their career to really look at creative ways to manage contingent work. I don't think we can understate the power that comes from that particular population. Two, technology has made it easier for organizations to create and curate these sort of pools, right? Mm-hmm. And then three, like I just mentioned before, these organizations are awash in candidates, just flowing with candidates. Every ATS is probably bursting at the seams. Putting some skill and discipline behind making sure those folks have a good experience is probably going to be a great way to source full-time hires as well moving forward. Mm-hmm. Try before you buy, all those other sorts of things. So I think those are some of the main forces that are influencing that. And I think also, containing cost. Which is a very cost-effective mechanism. And also making sure that you put more revenue in the hands of the workers. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits of sourcing direct is the margin requirements are obviously lower. So we're able to pay those resources more as opposed to being constrained with a larger markup.
That's right. And then to that end, just with my background, part of me, and I don't think anyone has the answer to this question figured out, but what is that going to mean to the traditional staffing agency if we do see this upward trend in direct sourcing?
I think it's a mistake to think that staffing agencies are going to go the way of the dodo bird. I think there's always going to be a place for staffing, and a direct sourcing strategy is not going to work for every category of labor, and it's not going to be the panacea for every company. Some organizations are not going to have sufficient scale density, geographic density, demand density to require and necessitate those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So I think there's always going to be a role for staffing firms, 100%. Right. 100%. I don't think that direct sourcing is it's ever going to replace you're not going to replace a deco with a direct sourcing strategy necessarily. Right.
Yeah.
It works in the places where it works. I think that there will be some compression in margins and there will be increased expectations from suppliers. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't even know what that was, but anyway, I think at the end of the day, staffing firms don't have anything to be afraid of. In fact, there's many staffing firms who join the party. They look at repurposing some of their recruiting horsepower to more of an RPO situation or a CRPO
exactly
situation.
Exactly right.
So
right.
I think that there's a way. If you can't beat them, join them, right?
Exactly.
And I think, that's the staffing in and of itself is a relatively mature industry. In a lot of ways. And that maturity has not necessarily lent themselves well to a lot of innovation.
Mm-hmm.
I think direct sourcing is an example of an opportunity for staffing firms to innovate and look at threats as opportunities as opposed to kind of trying to push the sand back uphill.
And it's the transformation and evolvement that, the more savvy staffing agency owners are going to have to transcend into to be able to capitalize on this movement. You mentioned RPO, and I've had that conversation with a few other staffing agency owners. What is that going to mean? And it all comes down to evolvement and, capitalizing on the movement that's happening, whether that is through an RPO or perhaps, at the end of the day, they're going to be teaching clients to do what they do.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the nature of the beast. And I think that, you have to be willing to make sure you make your clients better buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And mm-hmm. if they don't know, if your service in the value that you bring as a supplier, no matter where you are, easily replaced by technology, there's not a whole lot you can do about it as opposed to reassess what you're doing and how you can do better.
Exactly.
And how you can bring more value.
Yeah.
I remember, earlier in my career, before I started SAA, I was an enterprise buyer. And I was, for 12, 10 years or so, I was managing contingent workforce programs. And I would speak oftentimes at SAA conferences. And I remember the tenor at the time, 13, 14 years ago, was they were afraid that organizations were going to commoditize the value of staffing, the staffing firms. We were being relegated to the role of a commodity. And I remember being at round tables with staffing owners, and they were really lamenting the fact that they felt they were being commoditized.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really ironic to me because the hard thing to stomach, regardless of whatever industry you're in, is that if a client feels you're a commodity, then there's not going to be a whole lot you can do to change it. If he thinks you're a commodity, you're a commodity. Now, we agree, I believe holistically, completely, with every fiber of my being, in the value that staffing firms bring and the value that creation opportunity, providing people a way to make a livelihood, that is sacrosanct. That's a sacred role. I have a deep passion for it. But if the enterprise doesn't feel that the value you bring is truly a strategic one and more of a point solution or a transactional solution, well, that's you need to take a good hard look in the mirror and make a decision. Mm-hmm. Is this a client you want to work with?
Mm-hmm.
Is this an industry we want to be in? Is this a vertical we want to be in? Mm-hmm. Or what can we do to really meet the value expectations of my clients?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think VMSs and all these other solutions have done is force the industry to really take a good hard look at how they deliver and what they can do to be a much more strategic partner. And mm-hmm. direct source is going to do the exact same thing. It's going to make you relook at how you bring value.
Yeah.
And some organizations are not going to value it and someone's will. And it's the magic is making that marriage.
Right. Fascinating. So great tips on what staffing agencies can do to capitalize on this movement. But let me ask you this. So say if we woke up in your dream world, what are some of the steps that you would like to see take place so that enterprise organizations or just in general, anyone that's utilizing the external workforce can act as an advocate to the contingent workforce? What are some things from an advocacy perspective that we can do? You mentioned, making that experience better for them from the time that they're onboarded and in inputting your own branding. But, what's your outlook on advocacy for contingent workers?
Well, I think the biggest elephant in the room is going to be benefits, right? I think that if we're going to, as a society, we need to resolve the health insurance and all the other associated benefits that are typically tied to employment. So if I had my druthers, that would be resolved tomorrow. And I think that if we were to see a complete separation of benefits from employment, we would have an absolute sea change in the number of people who choose to work in a flexible manner. No question in my mind. Mm-hmm. I think that's first and foremost. I think what organizations can do to do that is to really look at the workforce in their entirety, understand how talent in all of its forms affects your profitability, your client outcomes, and then reassessing what you can do to make sure that you are optimizing every step in that process to maximize client experience and profitability. And then at the same time, recognizing that the contingent worker, those folks who are doing contingent work, are just as critical parts of your team as the guy who's been there for 12 years and before. I think that my computer was buzzing. I don't know what that was about. But anyway, I apologize if I lost that.
No worries. So it comes down to implementing, better benefits, ideally.
I think that in a societal change, and that's probably larger than most enterprises can accommodate, right? But I think that if you ask me what my idealized world would be, it would be some sort of resolution of the never-ending benefits problems.
Right. And you see statutory things happening at state levels. We always, you're from California, but we do recognize it as the Republic of California on the ongoing classification changes, the PTO requirements, the health insurance. So I think it's slowly transitioning, or it's going to force companies to make some changes, just like Obamacare did in 2015. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you found businesses in a position where they had to offer at least some form of minimal essential coverage to be compliant under ACA. So yeah. I do see that involvement happening, but if there can be businesses that identify that early on, that can be the make or break in a talent pool for the contingent worker.
I think also a big trend is going to be, independent professionals, independent contractors, people choosing to operate independently is going to be a huge trend. I think that organizations need to really take a look at that population as a whole. Mm-hmm. We talked about the major statistics earlier about the incredible increase. That's going to get easier for people to do, right? Yeah. I mean, you can put up your shop. You could buy a URL on GoDaddy. You could go ahead and buy, get a brand identity on Upwork, and then you can go to Fiverr to get a PowerPoint template, and you can source independent workers, and you can immediately be, present yourself as a much larger organization for next to nothing. So I think organizations need to think more expansively between how they choose to engage things like management consulting. Someone doesn't need to have, for example, a McKinsey background to deliver a McKinsey output.
Right.
Because the labor force is global in nature, and recognizing that, the best talent is not necessarily one that is going to be working as a W-2 employee someplace. The best talent is going to want to work independently, going to want to be able to control their future and monetize their experience themselves. So the organizations, I think, that are truly going to be successful are going to leverage and look at the policies they have that discourage engaging independent contractors or independent professionals and resolving those in some sort of broad manner.
Well, and that's interesting that you mentioned that. So I guess this can go ahead and segue us into classification, because in the last, I've been part of billion-dollar industries and their contract administrator, and we saw this trend happening where a lot of these enterprise organizations completely, forbid any form of independent contractor personnel just because of the classification risk that's involved and that multi-party sort of system. So if we're seeing this uptick happening in the entrepreneur, and it's easier than ever for them to start their own business and become classified as an IC, what are some of the measures that businesses should take to properly oversee that segment of the workforce and not involve themselves in or minimize, any kind of classification liability?
Well, I think the best thing you can do is to be honest with yourselves and recognize and make a decision. Right. I think that the key thing is how important is it for you to have the best people working in your location. And some organizations, it might not matter. Some organizations might have a strong enough employment brand that someone who wants to be an independent contractor is okay with working as a payrollee or something through a third-party provider. So that's the first step, is to really take a good hard look at how important talent is to the organization as a whole. Mm-hmm. Two is develop a comprehensive IC engagement strategy as a whole, leveraging a competent compliance partner, like, you know, at MBO Partners where I used to work, or, you know, Greenlight Financial or Talent Wave or Pinnacle mm-hmm. Technical, any of these other guys who do some form of compliance review and is willing to indemnify the organization for doing that. I think that is incredibly important to be able mm-hmm. to do. I think that the first step is to really take stock of the policy of none whatsoever, because what's going to happen is those guys are going to go someplace else. I mean, tell you firsthand from my time at MBO, good talent walks out the door if you don't accept them where they're at. And the best people are going to want to work and control and monetize their experience for themselves.
That's great. And leveraging an engagement partner that can, you know, you can outsource the liability and completely oversee the management and classification process there, and hopefully be up to date on all of those processes.
It really boils down to the organization making the decision that it's something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. And even the organizations that say we don't have ICs, I guarantee you they do.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe just in some other department or.
Yeah. It's hidden someplace under a statement of work somewhere.
They're there.
I can guarantee
it. Absolutely. Okay. So, and we might have gotten into this already through just our own dialogue, but what are some of the challenges that organizations are going to face if they are looking to increase contingent workers, increase the independent worker?
Let's see, what am I thinking about? I think one is going to be willing to pay more. Mm-hmm. Willing to pay more for good service. Don't expect to have your roles filled for $10 an hour when.
That's right.
I think you have to recognize you're competing not just with the guy across the street, but also you're dealing with, you know, expanded unemployment benefits for a period of time. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of decoupling and really taking a good hard look at, you know, those sort of roles, and this is probably something most people do already, but recognizing that, you know, what percent of the roles need to be in the building versus ones that could be done anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. and really developing processes and to create really effective remote teams should include strategies that incorporate external workers as well.
Yeah, so it all comes down to paying a little bit more money and potentially leveraging the globalization and the demand of.
Absolutely, yeah. They don't have to be down the street. They can be anywhere. If they don't need to be in the office, then why do they need to be in the state? If they don't need to be in the state, then why do they need to be, you know, why can't they be anywhere in the U.S.? And if they just be in the U.S., maybe it's someone in the same time zone. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. it's a nice daisy chain, and it's a great thought experiment to really kind of write down on a piece of paper what's possible and determine what's the best way to get something done.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was reading somewhere that businesses are no longer looking at locality as a priority. It all comes down to skill set and whether that can be fulfilled in the time frame that they need.
Yes, absolutely.
So definitely some shifts happening. All right. So this is my last question, which makes me sad, because I feel like we're just some contingent worker great dialogue happening here. But all right. So what is your opinion on the future of work and what that means? And, you know, what can businesses do to prepare?
Wow. Well, we just listen to the last 30 minutes for sure.
Yes.
You know, I'm trying to think about it. I think that it's a philosophical one for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that the future of work is going to be led by talent. I think the we talked about mission, 100%. We talked about purpose, we talked about all this other stuff. And I think it's really misleading to think that because we're coming out of a pandemic and people are going to be, you know, we have significant unemployment, and the economic times are challenging, the mistake will be that, oh, we're just going to be awash in people. And I think that quite the contrary. I think that the future of work really belongs to the workers, to the talent themselves. Yeah. Because never in human history have you had more opportunities to make a living. You could be an Uber driver at night. You can form your own consulting company. You can sell your stuff on Etsy. And then you can go and you know, buy and sell books at Amazon. I mean, so you're competing with a whole host of other things. And I think also another way to think about that with the talent-focused approach is to really reassess the way that you qualify workers as a whole. I think it's fantastic to focus on results over resume. And also maybe that job might not require a college degree. You know, I think that there's a lot of reassessing about how organizations choose to engage and decisions they make in engaging people as a whole. Mm-hmm. And if you think about providing the most opportunity for the most people possible, as a society, we're going to be able to have to really take a good hard look at how we make hiring decisions as a whole. Right. And the extended work is a great way to do that. Mm-hmm. And so if I think the future work belongs to the talent.
The world is your oyster.
That's exactly. Right. The world is your oyster.
Yes. And it responds to the war for talent while capitalizing on unconventional, untraditional ways that we have been so ingrained to think of good talent for, you know,
absolutely.
School, the resume, the relevant experience. What does that truly mean? Is that the best way for us to respond and curate a solid talent pool for my organization?
Absolutely.
That was super philosophical, but I dig it. Okay, so Brian, this wraps up our podcast today. Why don't you tell the audience out there how we can get in touch with you?
Well, you can reach out to me through LinkedIn. I like to accept almost all of my,
Lion.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what, I guess so. Yes, I'm an open network. Absolutely. I'm happy to talk to anyone. You can email me at my email, brian@defiantsolutions.net. And hopefully you can just put that email and the link to the podcast, and I'm happy to engage with whomever and just reach out and give me a call.
Brian@defiantsolutions.net. Okay. Brian Pena, it has been an absolute pleasure to interview today. Thank you so much for joining us and for the listeners to tune in today. Let us know if you have any questions, and we'll definitely make sure to include some information on how to reach out to you.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate the time, Angela. Take care.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.